This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes... These earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment. What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
Hey there, it's JVL. On The Secret Show with Sarah Longwell today, we talked about the superseding indictment, Hunter Biden, and the new campaign that Sarah's running. Here's the show. Okay. Indictment 2.1. Is that what we can call
This is a full three.
No, this is the superseding indictment that we got last night. We haven't gotten the third one yet. So last night we got the superseding indictment, which is Jack Smith's updating of the last indictment, the documents case, in which it adds a new target and charges. Yeah.
You know what? It's so funny. I've like read about, I read all the stuff, and then still in my head, I was like, this is the third indictment because there's so many indictments. And I'm like, and then when you just said that, I was like, oh, wait. Because I was like, wait, the third one's going to be Georgia. And then I was like, no, it's the January 6th is the third one.
Yes.
And then probably Georgia. But you're right. This is still the Dox case. And for some reason, and this is why I don't think that Americans, this can impact them, is because when close political observers, like it all just washes over you as like one big ball of legal catastrophe for Donald Trump that will make no difference to any voters. It's like hard to parse.
So the new defendant is Carlos de Oliveira, who is a Mar-a-Lago property manager. And I'm just going to read you one paragraph from Kim Whaley's piece about this. On Monday, June 27th, de Oliveira approached employee number 4, asked him to step away from his office, and walked with him through the basement tunnel. Once inside a small room called the audio closet, de Oliveira allegedly told employee 4 that, quote, the boss wanted the server deleted. End quote. The server here has surveillance photos and surveillance video of them going and trying to move documents they shouldn't have. Later that day at 3:55 p.m., Trump called De Oliveira and they spoke for approximately 3.5 minutes. This is I can't tell if this is more like a spy movie or more like Arrested Development. It feels like Arrested Development, like there's always money in the banana stand. But it's all bad. It's all very bad. And the most interesting thing is that what Kim says, maybe the most interesting, the most politically relevant thing, is that because of this superseding indictment, the planned trial date of May 2024 is likely to be moved back past November 2024. Mm-hmm. So this trial now is possibly going to take place post-election. And what this means is that the two other co-defendants with Trump have every reason in the world not to cut a deal. Because from their perspectives, their get-out-of-jail-free card is, like, the big guy wins the presidency and just pardons us.
Yeah.
We hang with him. Great. Great job, America. And nobody's going to care. This is right. Nobody's going to care. Like this, how many votes are going to be moved by the fact that he's under criminal prosecution for like stuff that's kind of serious?
Nothing's going to be moved on the primary side. I think the question is what happens on the general election side?
Do you think it's going to move people? Because now the matchup polling, Trump is, I wrote about this week.
It is.
He's polling 5% better, 5 points better than he performed in 2020 against Biden.
Yeah. So this is the thing. I mean, I am yelling at anyone who says that Trump's easier to beat than, you know, anybody. I'm like that Trump can't win or whatever. I'm like, you got absolutely he can. And I listen to swing voters There's a lot of backsliding among swing voters. I've mentioned this on the Secret Podcast. When I get back into doing the focus group podcast, I'm going to prove it to everybody and let you listen to how some of these swing voters sound. I mean, we did a swing voter group last night, and they were all people who voted for Trump in 16. Sorry, I'm just
going to
this was actually a slightly better group than we've seen. It was actually slightly better, but, you know, they voted for Trump in 16, Biden in 20. Six would vote for Biden today. Two would vote for Trump. So he's lost two people out of this group. It's usually a little more. The really bad news though was, none of them had heard of No Labels, but when we said this third party ticket might be like, they were all like, yeah, I'll vote for that.
Ooh.
And so, not everybody, but like some, and this is where, you know, I think there's going to be this really key group that we'll call the double doubters, or where they sort of do a pox on both their houses. That were willing to go for Biden the first time because he was sort of theoretically just a safe alternative to the Trump chaos, but who they sort of don't think he's done a good job. They, you know, are upset about the economy. Although I will say, when the moderator was like, so things are, you know, do you feel like things are improving, you know, as the economy has gotten better? And they were all like, oh, yeah, no, it has gotten better. Like, and here's some examples of improvement. So like they would acknowledge it when you raised it, which is, I would just say, evidence that the Biden administration really needs to start talking to people about it being good. Because when you tell people it's good, they're more likely to be like, yeah.
You should just trademark the phrase Bidenomics and say it every fifth sentence, don't you think?
Maybe, but they need to be like Bidenomics good, economy good. I don't even think Bidenomics, just economy good. Anyway, but I do think that this these double doubters are going to be kind of the ball game, and also the question of like, and I think it's probably the answer is still yes, that Trump inspires big turnout, but like, you know, are people just like less amped about it? So as nervous as I am from what I hear in the focus groups, there's also the fact that like Trump is mostly sitting on Truth Social sounding like a lunatic. And so like voters aren't seeing as much of him as like we are, who sit and see these like weirdo things that he's putting out. I think the question is what happens when you really are looking at Trump closely again? It always happens with Trump that the more you see of him, the less people like him, right? Like theoretically people take it, like right now I think there's, oh yeah, I liked the economy more under Trump. But I think when people see him, there's some of that might subside.
What did they think of the indictments? Did they know anything about them?
Yeah, people know about the indictments, but you know, people can't. So I would say, people think that Trump did it. Even in Trump groups, oftentimes people think that he did it, like did something wrong. But here's what they say. I'm sure I must have talked about this.
They all do it.
Yeah, Biden does it. Hillary, Hunter. What about? And that's why it's a two-tier justice system, because Trump getting in trouble for something that all these other guys have done, like, no, that's how they think about it. And that's why you see in the polling a discrepancy between people who think Trump is guilty, where lots of people will say, yes, we think he's guilty, but doesn't seem to impact his head-to-head polling.
So, Kim, this is a great segue to Hunter. So we had some Hunter news this week. And you're right. There is a two-tiered system of justice. On the one hand, we have Donald Trump fighting all of this stuff tooth and nail. On the other hand, we have Hunter Biden, who has been under investigation by a U.S. attorney who was appointed by Trump and who started investigating Hunter Biden under Trump, and who Joe Biden refused to replace when he took power because he did not want to interfere in this investigation. This U.S. attorney forced Hunter to cop to a plea deal 3 months ago, 2 months ago, on charges in which he was going to plead guilty. And that deal went, and many people were upset about it and said it's a sweetheart deal. And that deal went, as all plea agreements do, to judicial review with the presiding judge to look at it. This judge, also appointed by Donald Trump, this judge looked at the deal and questioned both sides and said, yeah, I don't think you guys actually agree on what the terms of the deal are here. And this is not looking kosher. You guys go back to the drawing room and figure it out. Look at this two-tiered system of justice where all of the justice stuff works with Hunter Biden. Oh, and yesterday, the White House was asked about pardoning Hunter Biden and flatly said, no, we will not pardon him. That is not on the table. So, yes, it's a two-tiered system of justice. The system of justice works very well with Hunter Biden, basically exactly as we would all want it to.
Yeah.
Am I wrong about that?
No, I don't think you're wrong about this one. I like with the Hunter, again, this Hunter Biden stuff is a story that I just cannot, I am not going deep on it. But I have more of an impression, really, of the way Biden, the administration, has handled the Hunter stuff, which I think has been quite good.
I
just think that they, like, the saying pardoning is off the table is exactly the right thing to say. We certainly know that Trump would pardon absolutely,
Ivanka.
Yeah, right.
Maybe not Eric. Eric's stupid. He didn't like Eric all that much. And definitely not the Tiffany. Tiffany. Tiffany would have to go to jail and do Orange is the New Black. But he would absolutely pardon Don Jr. and Ivanka.
Yeah. So I don't know. And I think that, the Biden crime family, you hear people say. I think if Hunter goes to jail, I think it loses Joe Biden. This is the one thing. None of the people in the swing voter groups, like the way that they viewed the Hunter Biden stuff is like, and even we asked about the granddaughter, which, by the way, I don't think you and I have talked about, but I think is really bad.
I wrote about it. It's very bad.
It's extremely bad.
And I think it is impossible to look at that and see Hunter Biden as anything but a bad person.
Hunter Biden is clearly, I think, a really not good person. But I think
he was clearly a troubled person.
Right.
And, maybe. But I think the daughter stuff pushes us way out past troubled and into just you are a bad person.
But don't you think, what about Biden? What about, he's got this granddaughter out there. I do find it shocking. I mean, I don't know. Right. You don't know the what's going on here exactly. But I think you do know that there is a grandchild of his that exists in the world that he has not seen or acknowledged. And I think that is, I don't know how to
it's
read that other than.
It's not great. I mean, his son placed him in an impossible position where his son was denying paternity on this kid. And Biden is a public figure. And he's like, so what is Biden supposed to do? Is Biden supposed to go against his kid who's denying paternity and embrace the granddaughter?
It's been established. Paternity
right now
been
it has
established.
Been right. Right. It has been established, but they were also in the process with all of the, okay, now the paternity has been established. What is Hunter going to do in terms of, making good to her and her mother? And he placed Biden in an impossible position. I don't think anything Biden did could have been good, but not seeing and embracing the granddaughter is bad.
To me, it is flatly bad. I don't think there's any other way. And I'm sure there's a lot I don't know and whatever, but I think I just can't see a scenario in which you don't
fully agree.
Fully acknowledge and go, paternity is established. Go see the kid and I don't know. But I will tell you that from the voter standpoint, the voters have there's one of these in every family. Like they just don't hold it against, people, addiction and having a member of your family be like troubled is a thing that a lot of people can relate to. And the things that they didn't care about were they didn't care about anything with the Biden family stuff. They just see that as a personal issue and not relevant. And then also we asked about the idea of Biden getting impeached.
What did they think about that?
One woman was like, how hard can I roll my eyes? Like, they just thought it was stupid. The idea of impeaching.
That's
Biden.
Interesting to me. Yeah, so do you think that could help?
Well, that's why I said on the next level. But
yeah,
I thought if they
and
tried
I've been
to
thinking about that
him,
a lot.
I think if they tried to impeach him, I would say it ultimately works for Biden. And I explained why on the next, but like, I think that a lot of the, there's just a lot of like, what would be the right word? Like ambivalence toward Biden from the left,
right.
You know, and his low poll numbers, as we've discussed many times, reflect that at least there's a chunk of Democrats who don't approve of his job, ostensibly probably because he's not progressive enough and they view him as not doing enough.
That's probably right, yeah.
And so I think you get a rally around Biden from the impeachments.
What if it's just an impeachment inquiry? Like, what if they don't get all the way to the vote?
Yeah, I still think...
Like, can they thread that needle where the Republicans say, see, we did impeachment, but they don't do it in such a way to create a backlash?
You know, these are hard. It's hard because you've got to see, like, kind of how it plays and how they do right. it. I just think these... Like, if the Committee on Weaponization of Government is any indication... these guys are not particularly good right now at the inquiry side. Like, yeah. They're stepping all over their genitalia. If I had to lay money, it would on an impeachment inquiry of any kind where they tried to get it, that they end up helping Biden solidify his base, reminding people of why they hate Republicans. And some of it's just from how much I watched Republicans rally around Trump when they go after him. I think that's how I think it would play. I think they do it at their peril.
Okay. You have started a new campaign, had a big launch in the New York Times. Would you like to tell the people about it? Because this is one of the 15 different hats you wear.
Yeah, I don't usually talk about the stuff we do on the more activist side.
We don't have to if you don't want to. I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No. I do want to talk about it just because I think that it's worth... Look, we talk a lot on both the Next Level and here, like, what do we think the right strategy is? And what is going to shake Trump loose? And I think everybody here knows that I also do work on the, like, we try to figure out how to... I mean, we spent tens of millions of dollars in 2020 trying to elect Biden and defeat Trump through our Republican Voters Against Trump campaign. In 2022, we were the biggest outside spender against Carrie Lake. We went after all of the election deniers. Also helped some pro-democracy Republicans. And like, that's the lens through which, you know, I think we spent like $22 million in 2022 on trying to defeat the anti-democracy Republicans. And so, Donald Trump is cruising to this nomination, and I'm not sure what we can do to disrupt it, but doing the focus groups, which I do both to tell all of you guys what the people are thinking, but also for strategic reasons, to try to understand what can you do to loosen Trump's grip on the party? Is there anything you can do? And obviously in my analysis, I'm pretty bearish on our ability to not to have Trump be the nominee, but there's one path, and I've talked about this on the Next Level. Tim and I were arguing about it actually this week a little bit, which is that there has been a chunk of voters this whole time, right? I talk about the party. I think there's sort of 30% always Trumpers, 30% maybe Trumpers, 30% move on from Trumpers, and then maybe 10% never Trumpers. And those 10% tend to be distributed in between sort of Asa, Chris Christie, Heard, and maybe like a Nikki Haley, Tim Scott, right? But then there's the move on from Trumpers, and those were DeSantis people. They really wanted, and that there's a reason that the way people talked about DeSantis, especially when DeSantis was just really popping after 2022, I mean, we could barely find somebody who wanted to immediately say like, yeah, I'm all in for Trump. Those move on from Trump people and even the maybe Trumpers were really DeSantis curious and really excited to see him. And the way they talked about him was Trump without the baggage. And that is because they catastrophize about Joe Biden, right? Joe Biden is the worst president in history. We're in a Great Depression and everything, you know. And so they want someone who can win. They want someone who can win. And electability really matters. And this is where I've said this 1,000 times, like, I do not understand the DeSantis team strategy. Like, they had a very clear path, which was to consolidate the move on from Trumpers, get to 30% and start working their way with that viability into the maybe Trumpers and make a case for, like, Trump was a great president, but also he's too old. Swing voters are never going to vote for him because he tried to overturn an election. Like, and maybe I understand that it is dicey to see how hard you can go. But I think a talented politician would have figured it out. Ron DeSantis turned out to be not the least bit of a talented politician. And in fact, none of the other ones are either. I find it almost insane that after 7 years of people having seen Trump, seen it, what failed against him last time, nobody has been able to, like, figure out how to take him on, or, like, they're all doing the same things they did in 2016. Like, no one's changing strategy. Yeah. And, you know, so these voters got a look at DeSantis and they now, you know, they've basically been like, meh. But there is this, even with people who say, I definitely want to vote for Trump, if you ask them, like, do you think he can win a general election? Even those voters are like, I don't know. And so that's it. That's the one central anxiety. The one hang up people have about Trump is that he has too much baggage. We hear it over and over and over again. I think he has too much baggage to win a general election. And I think we need somebody else who can win. And so that was it. That was the only door we saw cracked open with voters where there's room for persuasion. And so, you know, I've always, all the campaigns that I run have a messaging strategy in which the messenger is the message. And so in 2020 and in 2022, we found lots of, people who'd voted for Trump the first time or people who'd been lifelong Republicans, all talking, making the case, making testimonials, videos, real people talking about why they couldn't support Trump. And we turned those into ads and ad campaigns. We put them on billboards. We put them on TV. And they have tremendous persuasion effect because you can build sort of a tribe within a tribe, people who can maintain their Republican identity, but not vote for Trump and either just not vote, leave it blank, or vote for Biden. And obviously, you know, when you have somebody who voted for Trump in 16 and they vote for Biden in 20, that's a net voter. You get two votes for that because you take one from Trump and you give one to Biden.
Take a banana, take a buck.
That's right.
Yes.
And so that is when you have those net voters, that's gold, right? That's what you need to swing an election. And it worked, right? Turnout super high across the board. But Biden won the double doubters in 2020, even though people who, like, weren't that into Biden were, I don't want to vote for a Democrat. But, like, he won them over. I think it's going to be a little harder going into 24, as we talked about. But on the primary side, we knew that we were, like, the only credible messenger. It can't be somebody who, it has to be people who voted for Trump twice. And we knew that was going to be hard to find. But we worked on it for the last 6 months, and we have over 70 testimonials from two-time Trump voters talking about why Trump shouldn't be the nominee. And they sound just like the people in the focus groups. Like, we knew that these people were there to go find. And here's the thing about them. Like, unlike the other past two campaigns that we've done, those people were like us, essentially, or like closer to like people who had been identified as Republicans and now were.
Been a Republican my whole life, but I just can't do this.
That's right.
These are not that.
These are not that. And so, like, I was not sure we could get this campaign done. But, you know, I got a crack team over.
So what
do
they? Give me a, for instance, what is a paraphrase an ad for me? I voted for Trump twice, and I think he's the greatest president of my lifetime, and I wish he could be president again, but I just don't see how he could do it, Lurline.
They don't have that accent. Some of them do have, like, some of them have sort of a southern accent. I mean, I don't know exactly what accent you're doing, but some people have a southern accent.
Hey again, it's JVL. The conversation goes on from there. If you want to hear the rest of the show, head on over to Bulwark Plus and subscribe. We'd love to have you.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it,
and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/iHeart.
Does Friendly have a taste? If it does, it's probably like Hello's peppermint-flavored anti-plaque and whitening toothpaste. Brush away plaque, show tartar who's boss, and remove surface stains to naturally whiten. Hello's thoughtful and flavor-forward products make brushing your teeth feel like a confetti-filled bathroom dance party. So say hello to Hello with the always cruelty-free, never-tested-on-animals toothpaste that's made to spread smiles. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.